My name is Nate Hinman. I'm from the Huffington Post, hence the entertainment remark. I cover startups, venture capital, and technology. And I've been reporting on the barriers foreign entrepreneurs face in starting companies in the U.S. for a little over a year now. A fellow journalist at The Economist, Robert Guest, recently said that America shutting out skilled immigrants is like Saudi Arabia setting oil, setting fire to its oil wells. Studies show that in any given year, immigrants create more than a quarter of all new businesses. And some research by Vivek, one of our panelists, found that here in Silicon Valley, between 1995 and 2005, foreign entrepreneurs created 52% of the startups here. Yet, that number may be dropping. The process by which foreign entrepreneurs obtain a visa to do so, to build these companies, is slow, it's cumbersome, and often it is humiliating. The point of today's panel is to discuss Blueseed as a partial solution to a U.S. immigration system that makes it difficult for foreign entrepreneurs to build future Googles on American soil. Blueseed, if successful, would be the first ever floating startup visa-free incubator. It would exist in international waters, roughly 12 miles off the coast of California. Perhaps most importantly, it could provide a place where selected foreign entrepreneurs could live and build technology startups without having to deal with the headache of obtaining a U.S. visa. We're joined today by Vivek Wadhwa. Vivek, you are a technology entrepreneur turned academic. You currently oversee educational programs at Singularity University, and also you are said you split time between there and Silicon Valley. I'm sorry, between there and Stanford University. Vivek, your research and writing in recent years has shed light on a startling trend in America that we're letting foreign entrepreneurs come study here and then throwing them out when they graduate, leading them to eventually launch companies and create jobs in other countries. You've been one of the most vocal champions of the startup visa bill, a bill before Congress that would create a separate visa class for entrepreneurs. Thanks for joining us.
Sure.
We're also joined by Max Marty here. Max, you're the CEO and co-founder of Blueseed, the for-profit company that's aiming to make this floating visa-free incubator a reality. Max, you yourself are the son of two immigrants. You received your MBA from University of Miami, and before starting Blueseed, you were the director of business strategy at the Seasteading Institute, which aims to create societies on the ocean. So I'd like to start off and just kind of learn from you about how you came up with the idea for Blueseed.
So for a long time, I've been very interested in what causes economic growth, why new technologies come about. And I think entrepreneurship is at the heart of that. I think that's why the United States is the premier creator of new technologies and innovations around the world, because we have such a vibrant and thriving entrepreneurial system here in this country. And when I was getting my MBA at the University of Miami, as is the case with a lot of graduate programs these days, a lot of people who were in that program were from various parts of the world. There were people from India and China, Europe, and being the University of Miami, a lot also from South America. So a lot of these individuals, I was actually the president of the entrepreneurship club there, a lot of these individuals would tell me that they were very interested in starting companies when they left their graduate program. Some of these companies were on the smaller end, so everything from a little chocolate boutique store to the larger end, so the next Googles or the next Facebooks, big tech companies. But all of them realized that they were going to have a big problem getting the visas necessary to do so. They didn't see that there was really a way for them to do that. And if there was a way, it was expensive, it was cumbersome, it was a headache, and it wasn't likely to succeed. So they got dissuaded from their ideas, and following with them, about half of them ended up going back to their home countries and trying to do something there. And about half of them stayed here and got sponsored by an existing company here in the United States. So they didn't end up creating the companies that they wanted to create. And I think that is a travesty. It's a tragedy that that happened. So ever since then, I've sort of told myself that this is a big problem. This is something that needs to be addressed. And if I can find a good way to address it, I would. And that's what I discovered when I went to the Seasteading Institute and I worked there for a while, that applying the ideas that I learned and the style of approaching the solution to a problem that I learned at the Seasteading Institute with this very big and very important issue that needs to be addressed, if not solved, I think I certainly found my niche.
So how about to start things off, we kind of discuss the overhead costs of such a venture. I've read in research that they'd be somewhere in the ballpark of $15 million to $35 million. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I imagine that with that cost involved, you must be getting ready to pitch investors. And let's hear kind of your elevator pitch initially for the ship. And then also, clarify if those figures are off for the initial overhead costs.
So in terms of the figures, that depends a lot on whether you go with building something completely from scratch, some sort of customized vessel, or you go on the used cruise ship market and you buy something and then retrofit the inside of it, because of course a cruise ship doesn't come with office space. Hmm. So you retrofit the inside of it and you go from there. So on the low end of that, so if you buy a used cruise ship and it's kind of the most kind of bare bones used cruise ship, you can do that with about $20 million up front, which is really inexpensive actually to address such a big problem. We would be looking at doing something maybe a little higher than that, so $50-60 million would be the approximate cost we need up front. And then there's some $10-20 million around there that it would take per year in operating costs and that sort of thing. But it makes this project quite feasible in relation to a lot of other things that are going on. But unfortunately, it isn't the kind of project that you can kind of start in a garage and, have three guys programming really hard for something for a few months and kind of bootstrap the whole thing into existence. It puts it in a kind of a different category. But I still think it's a very feasible category. So to give you kind of the elevator pitch, there's a lot of people, as we've been discussing, around the world who want to come to Silicon Valley because it's the most fertile place to create a company. It's not the only place in the world you can create a new company or a high-tech company, but it's certainly one of the best, if not the best, place you can do that. So it's a shame that a lot of them want to come to this place in order to create those companies, but they're not able to do so, which means we don't get to enjoy the jobs, the economic growth, the new technologies that would otherwise exist. However, Blue Seed has found a solution to that problem, which is to go to create a community for these entrepreneurs to be able to live and work on their idea 12 miles off the coast of Silicon Valley. Why 12 miles? Because when you're 12 miles outside the U.S. coastline, you're outside of the U.S.'s territorial waters, which means you're outside of the jurisdiction of the United States when it comes to something like customs and visa issues. Mm-hmm. So you can have somebody living and working on their startup and not have to worry about how they get the H-1B or how they get the proper visa to be able to work on their companies. So this will be on a vessel, on a ship, for about 1,000 of the world's as we like to say, the best, boldest, and brightest entrepreneurs who are interested in creating high-growth, high-tech startups.
I think that's you're nearing 30 seconds, but...
Okay. So there's certainly a lot of details, and we can get into that. But the long and the short of it is being really close to Silicon Valley and being able to conveniently come in and out and meet with investors and that sort of thing is very important for these companies. So it's that close physical proximity to Silicon Valley that's important and that we're capitalizing on.
Vivek, I know you're probably chomping at the bit to share your thoughts. So do not devour that mic just yet. But before we hear from you on Blue Seed, I want to ask you about the state of immigration reform as it relates to entrepreneurs. Based on the kind of gridlock we've seen in Congress, can we realistically count on the government to fix these policies?
I give it almost no chance. In fact, I've been hopeful a couple of times before, but... Both sides are playing games. The Republicans will not allow, quote, amnesty for the, quote, illegals at any cost. I mean, that's toxic now. And the Democrats won't allow any problems to be solved unless they keep the Hispanic community happy, which is looking for that amnesty. So both sides pretend to care. They pretend to put legislation forward, but they're just not agreeing to it. You know, given the fact that this... H.R. 1012, whatever that bill was called, to remove some per-country limits, that couldn't get done. You had one difficult senator holding it up, and the whole thing is stalled. I don't see what the chances are of getting anything meaningful through the Senate and Congress, so I'm pessimistic.
And that's on the Startup Visa Act or in general?
They couldn't get the simplest legislation through, which was just to remove one stupid cap, which is disadvantaging people from large population countries. That couldn't happen because one senator had his own agenda and no one dared to defy him. So if that couldn't happen, how are we going to get something as ambitious as the Startup Visa Act through? What's going to happen is that you're going to have senators putting riders on, whatever they call these amendments onto the bills, asking for concessions over here, and they play every game in the book, and it will not pass. So that's what the problem is.
Okay, now let's shift the focus back to this project. And Vivek, I'd love to get your kind of initial
thoughts. Nate, I want to be very positive about it because right. I mean, I'm the most pro-immigrant guy. I'm the guy who gets death threats for talking about immigration all the time, okay?
Yikes.
And I want every solution there is to be implemented. And, you know, this is a good step in the right direction, but it doesn't solve the problem. That's what my concern is, that... think about it. Let's say that you were from Bulgaria and you want to start a company over here, you're probably still single. I mean, if you were married and had children, how would you go and live on a floating island off the coast of California? What would you do with your children? Where would they be? I mean, how would your wife live there? What would she do? Where would she work? And all the practical things about it make it so difficult. Like I said, it's good for kids out of school who have no girlfriends, who can be away from their families, who want to be able to work together and so on. It's good for a small segment, but the most innovative companies aren't founded by these young college dropouts, believe it or not. I mean, the majority of technology companies are started by middle-aged people who are 39 years of age, who have families, who have children, who have experience from from working at large companies and who now want to change the world. That's where the majority of entrepreneurs come from. This doesn't solve the problem for that community, and that's what my worry is. So, Max, nothing personal, but, I'm trying to add, some realism to the problem over here.
I'm very interested in addressing the points that you just made.
Go ahead.
So, as we both know, this is a much bigger problem than 1,000 people on a ship.
Right.
So this is something that affects the lives of, I don't know, we could say tens of thousands, maybe more.
There are about 1.1 million skilled immigrants and their families as of 2008 stuck in immigration limbo. So that number is probably 1.2, 1.3 today, million people stuck in limbo. We keep talking about the 12 million illegals who jumped over the fence. There are more than a million skilled immigrants here legally, doctors, lawyers, scientists, cream of the crop. Educated people legally who didn't do anything wrong waiting for green cards. So that's what we're talking about.
And And so the number of those who would be interested in starting a high-tech company may, you know, maybe some percentage of that. Yeah. But also, if there was a solution to this problem, I think we would see a lot more people come out who right now they realize that they would get stuck in that limbo and this problem, so they don't even apply in the first place.
Right.
So I think it is an enormous problem. And like I said, Blue Seed would only solve that problem for, even if it worked, for only 1,000 individuals at this early stage. So I certainly do not see this as a solution to the problem. And I agree with you 100% on that. I think the solution from this problem, Blue Seed does really well and we decide to create, we get another ship and do it for more. But there's no way we can scale to the size necessary to, quote unquote, solve the problem. So the problem does eventually have to be solved legislatively.
Right.
I don't see that there's another good solution. That or the talent will really end up, fertile soils will be created in other countries and other areas, and U.S. will lose
that advantage. It's already happening worldwide. I mean, the program I helped start was Startup Chile, where they have about 250 companies roughly right now, several hundred entrepreneurs who are in that category, who basically were bribed by the government, gave them $40,000 to go there. It was a bribe to come to Santiago, Chile, and they're doing the same thing you hope to do off the shore.
Right.
Building companies.
So to us, this is addressing, Blue Seed is addressing the problem and addressing it for a very specific segment, which is namely, like you said, it's people who don't already have ties and don't already have families and a lot of other obligations. So I got a lot of this information from feedback market research that we did on companies that are interested in locating on board that have expressed interest. And they themselves say, this is a solution for me for 6 months, a year, et cetera, until I can get enough funding, that it's a realistic possibility for me to be able to convince USCIS that I'm a, quote, legitimate enterprise, not, some sort of fraudulent group, and that I can get the proper visas to be able to be on shore. So we see this as addressing the problem for a small segment of the population, but it also shines a very big spotlight on this.
Right.
So it's saying, look, this is what it took. This is what had to do.
That's a good thing you've done here. It's gotten so much press out of it. It's a slap in the face. So all the congressmen and senators are talking about it. Hey, they're building this colony off California. So it's larger than life right now, which is good because it gets them to worry about competitiveness. But again, it's 1,000 people.
I think the impact the impact of even one person, with enough publicity and enough coverage can be enormous. I think the impact that we will have on this problem, even if it only begins to push the envelope in terms of new legislation and such, I think it's a highly leveraged way to address the problem. So that's what we're looking to do. And in the meantime, I think we'll get a lot of interesting companies coming out of here. Sure, it'll be a drop in the bucket relative to the number that would exist if only we could really solve the problem. But I'm really excited about those companies.
All right, so let's say you get 1,000 people to want to come to it, and I have no doubt in the world that there are 1,000 entrepreneurs who don't have families. I mean, most of these young geeks don't have girlfriends or boyfriends, and that's the way they are anyway. And you could lock them up in a cave for 6 months, and the world wouldn't know that they were missing. So you can find.
Hopefully, that won't be the case. They'll be able to get off.
But you won't find 1,000 people like that. Now, the magic of Silicon Valley is in the networks. The fact that you can go to Starbucks and just start sharing your ideas with people. You start talking to people, and they recommend their friends to you, and they volunteer, and they start sharing ideas with you, and so on and so on. The trouble is, you're 12 miles off the shore, and most people here can't swim. So how are we now?
There's a lot of sharks in those water too. By the way.
So how are we now going to build that network to Silicon Valley? You might as well be in Mexico for that matter, because it's still that hard to come to shore. You still have to go through San Francisco customs. You still have to go through the regular bureaucracy. Have your passport stamped. They won't be able to come here every day, on shore leave.
So the way we're looking to do that is using the B1, B2. Business and tourist travel visa, where individuals can come on shore for up to 6 months, 180 calendar days a year, and then you can renew that for up to a certain number of years, depending on what country you're from. But the long and the short of it is, it takes about half an hour to go ship to shore on a ferry, and we're actually creating a relationship with CBP right now, such that individuals won't have to go all the way through San Francisco, which, as you mentioned, is the only Class A port of entry in the area. So they will be able to get there their passports essentially stamped and say, look, you're coming in and out of the country. But streamlining that process is very important, exactly because, like you said, it's the ecosystem here in Silicon Valley. It's the people. It's the connection. It's not the buildings. It's not the streets.
Right.
It's not. It's the people and the connections you make sitting at, you know, Red Rock Cafe or something.
Okay, I've got a couple of friends who own yachts. Will they be able to take their yachts to your ship and dock and import some immigrants?
As long as Coast Guard's okay with that, and as long as Homeland Security is okay with that, because we want to be very careful and very clear in stating that everybody who's on board has been in one way or another allowed to be in U.S. soil, because that's very important for, you know, security reasons and all that. But yeah, if that's the case and they want to come tie up, you know, that we encourage it. So
Max,
it's a two-way street.
Max, does that mean that the ship will be subject to U.S. law? I think, you know, in kind of doing a little background on seasteading, it's my understanding that you'll have to fly a flag of a nation, and a certain flag can be subject to their laws. So could you give us a little background on how that'll work?
So there's two issues here. There's what you're legally subject to according to U.S. law, and then there's what you will subject yourself to according to U.S. law. In other words, what we will go out of our way to sort of grant the U.S. jurisdiction over us in a certain sense. So what do I mean? Well, for example, when you're 12 miles off the coast, you're no longer in the U.S., so you could be doing something like gambling. You could be doing something like financial services. In fact, a lot of cruise lines and companies do this, right?
No, that's a good opportunity to talk about hot startups.
That's a bad opportunity. Right? So it's important to sort of play things.
You bring in beautiful Russian women and some hunks from there. And
I tell you, I get interesting emails. Let me just put it that way. A lot of interesting business opportunities being extended here.
Because I get those emails all the time right now, so they could just be located close by.
Yeah, you know, it's a ship full of, right, mostly men. This is the fear, right?
Right.
But then we are being very careful so as to be very choosy in the startups that we get on board. So there's a number that I've come up to us and talked about, you know, I want to do financial services or I want to do certain things. And we're saying, look, even though that's legal, that would not seem right. That would not play well with the U.S. constituency, with the U.S. government. So we're not going to be allowing that sort of stuff on board. We've been approached a couple of times with drugs as well. You know, I want to start a clinic on board. And, of course, the first big problem is, well, that's not a high-tech startup. Excuse me. And the other problem is, the U.S. government's public policy is not very favorable towards
that. It's going to be off the shore of Oakland. Are you kidding? Marijuana City.
The federal government's the one in charge of those waters. So,
right.
So will the startups be paying U.S. taxes? Where will they be incorporated?
So it's a very good idea for companies to be incorporated in Delaware. Generally, even if they're in other parts of the world, Delaware has very good case law when it comes to companies, when it comes to corporate law. So from the startups that have already expressed interest in being on board, a number of them have said, look, we'd be interested in incorporating in Delaware. And that would subject them to U.S. law in many cases. So they would essentially be treated as a U.S. offshore company. And when it comes to taxes, then they would be subject to If it's the company's taxes, it would be subject to whatever taxes the U.S. government wants to levy on them. And the individuals themselves would be subject to the taxes of their home nations. So, for example, if they're coming from Germany, they would be subject to German income tax. We ourselves will not be levying any additional taxes except for unless you want to call rent and the equity position that we take in each of these startups a tax. But other than that, we won't be subjecting them to any additional taxes. Mm-hmm.
And how much equity do you plan on taking in the startups?
So we're taking about 6% on average in the startups.
Got it. So, Vivek, you were talking before about how you're happy that this has kind of shed a lot of light and brought a lot of attention to this issue. Is there a concern, though, that this is kind of diverting attention from, you know, potentially more far-reaching solutions?
Well, given the fact that there's likely been no progress, we might as well make our politicians feel bad about it, that this is something which is getting a lot of media attention. It's getting positive media attention.
Right.
So they're not going to do anything anyway, so we might as well put pressure on them and have the public wonder why these idiots in Capitol Hill aren't fixing the immigration laws. So I don't see any downside from it. This is why I haven't said anything bad about Blue Suite in any interview ever of it. Because even though I'm not convinced that it's going to be practical for the people that I write about, it's still a good thing. It's a good drop in the bucket.
Would you invest, Vivek?
No, because I'm not rich like my friends are, and I'm not sure about the long-term business model, because it could be that Obama Romney decide after they get elected that, hey, we should finally address this thing that we're bleeding to death. You'll start seeing a couple of Google-class companies coming up in India, China, or Brazil, mm-hmm. and suddenly there'll be a mad rush to fix immigration policy. It could happen 2 or 3 years from now. And now that hurts the business model of Blue Seed, because if the startup visa does happen 2.5 years from now, then what?
But if Blue Seed was what was instrumental in getting these politicians to start the conversations and talk about this problem, then I think it would still have been a pretty
Absolutely.
Good investment.
But I don't have enough money to put into investments like that to do good like that.
Sure.
I'd rather use my pen.
Someone who does have enough money, though, is the founder of PayPal, one of the original investors in Facebook, Peter Thiel, who is who is your primary investor. That's correct. He's put in $500,000 so far. Is that accurate?
So, no, Peter has made a commitment to put in some money. He'd also like us to bring in some other investors and sort of what's known in the business as syndicating, meaning just bring in a number of different investors from different fields. He hasn't put in that money yet. Mm-hmm. He's just he's spoken to us and said, look, very clearly that he is going to make a commitment to put in a certain amount of money. And he'd also like to keep putting on money and sort of follow-up investments.
Peter should put the $50 million in. If he's serious about starting these offshore communities, this is a good test bed for it. And $50 million, he just made $500 million from Facebook. So if he's serious about it, he should put his money where his mouth is. What's $500,000 for him? It's like a quarter for us.
I think that raises a good question. I mean, is Peter more interested in building these offshore cities, or is he actually interested in the immigration issues? Based on any of your conversations with him, what's your take on why he's backing this venture?
So I think Peter is interested in grand visions that sort of address problems in a very big and powerful way using new technologies. He's very interested in sort of what pushes economic growth and what causes a lot of this cool stuff to come about. So Peter sees us as kind of a sort of a wild card. Like, I can put some money into this, and if it succeeds, it'll change everything, and let's see how that pans out. And it could be, what kicks off other individuals to think about new ways to solve problems using the ocean. That's great. So, if Peter... I think Peter's interested in both of those angles. He's interested in sort of the grander, faraway vision, and in also addressing a problem that is impeding the development of a lot of cool technologies and a lot of cool companies.
So how are you supporting yourself in the meantime if he hasn't given you money?
Ramen noodles.
Oh, my God. We need to put pressure on, you should write a HuffPost piece saying, well, Peter, why don't you write the check? I mean, if you're serious about it, then get this thing off the ground. We can't let these people starve in the meantime.
So pretty tasty, though.
What have you done up until now? Have you had conversations? I mean, before this panel, we spoke about how, I think your exact words were, if the U.S. doesn't want this to happen, it will make it very difficult for it to happen. Have you spoken to, U.S. officials or business leaders in Silicon Valley about this idea? Have you, received pushback? What have those conversations been like?
So the U.S., we've spoken to a few U.S. officials. We've spoken to some people from Congress. We've spoken to some people from some of the government agencies that are involved. I can't name which, unfortunately, because they have this, they always tell me they have this policy that even though they think this is really cool and really awesome, they can't say that publicly. So, I don't want to I don't want to name any names, but so far we've had a pretty good reception with a number of these individuals, and again, it goes back to that point that they see this as a way to further jobs and further the creation of new companies here in the U.S. soil, and a lot of them have a vested interest in doing so and being seen as doing so. So we've gotten some pretty good receptions around that. I think your other question was what else are the sort of details that we've been hammering out lately? So there is the question of which is the vessel we're going to use, which is the actual platform we're going to use. Other logistical questions such as how do you get supplies on board safely? How do you maintain the environment such that it's a comfortable place to live? Right, you're on a ship, you're in the water. How do you make that a community that people want to stay on the ship and want to enjoy their time there rather than a place that they say, oh my gosh, I'm going to go live on this vessel for 6 months or a year or so. And hammering out a lot of those details has been what we've been up to in the past 6 months. And thankfully, we've had a lot of people who sort of come to us. So we reach out a little bit, but then we say, look, we're also interested in connecting with people who are involved in clean tech companies that are doing something with the ocean or are involved in building cool communities. And they then, you know, send us emails and say, look, we'd like to connect. We'd like to help you out. And we've been sort of getting a lot of this put together by those connections that we've been making.
Hey, Max, I've got a plan B for you. So it's going to seem bizarre. But Dean Kamen, the Edison of today, he owns an island called North Dumpling Island, which is technically in international waters.
Is this a Segway?
The Segway thing.
Yep.
Literally off the coast of New Hampshire. I was with him over the weekend in Mexico, and he was telling me all the history of it. It literally, U.S. laws don't apply to it. He has his own currency. He's sort of half kidding about it, but you could probably find an island like that, or maybe even lease space from him, where you could simply build a building and get people over there. There might be some other ways of skinning this one. So you literally don't have to have a ship. It just happens to be a set of buildings on a nearby island or something.
I'd certainly love to expand this model to other places.
North Dumpling Island and read up about what Dean Kamen is doing there. I can give an intro to him.
Cool. That'd be awesome, yeah.
How far is it from Silicon Valley? Isn't the whole idea?
On the other side, but there you'll get Bloomberg, Mayor Bloomberg, being very supportive because he's one of the most pro-immigration, most pro-skilled immigrant people out there. He'd be very excited if there was something which would bring startups to New York City versus Silicon Valley. It fits in with his dream. And like I said, you'd probably be able to get some significant money from the New York community to do something close to them because they want to compete with Silicon Valley.
I think that'd be a great idea.
Yeah.
To me, it's just a matter of I see Silicon Valley as sort of the most fertile place in the world to do it.
New York is number two. It's a distant number two, but I tell you, New York is building a lot of momentum. And something like this, 1,000 new startups on an island off New York would be great for them. And the government would help you there. They're not as bankrupt as we are in California. So you might get more support from that coast than you do over here. Because here we take it for granted. This is, we take innovation for granted over here. Other parts of America, other parts of the world are desperate to catch up to Silicon Valley. That's a better bet for you.
I think that comes down to what our customers are looking for. And so far we've seen that everybody who we've spoken to is saying Silicon Valley to me is sort of the hub of it. And it could just be that it's the most sort of visible place. So it's the one that first comes to people's minds.
Global,
so I'm not saying it's a bad
global
idea.
Entrepreneurs will not say no to New York. It's not Silicon Valley, but I tell you, if you're sitting there in Bangalore or you're in Rio de Janeiro, New York is still a very exciting place to be. Look into it. I'm just putting some ideas in your head.
Sure.
Right.
That idea, do we think that would open up the program to people who had families if it were on an island?
And an island is much easier because you can have parks. You can build better housing and stuff like that than you can on a ship. That's my concern about the ship. That really you have if you've been on a cruise, you know how small the rooms are, and it's really not somewhere where you can spend time with your family or socialize very well. So that's a concern I have.
So Vivek, it seems like you're kind of opening up to the idea of a visa free locale, isolated somewhere.
Absolutely,
whether it be on a
ship or an island. I mean, it's badly needed, but. whether you do it on a ship or whether you do it in the Bahamas or whether you do it on North Dumpling, the devil is in the details. How can you make it practical for people to take their families and build companies? And then the other part of it is, how do you build networks amongst these people? That's the experiment we're doing in Chile right now. We actually, Chile might as well be an island off the coast of America because it's so far, middle of nowhere. We brought in 200 companies, and now they're building the networks. So it's the interactions, the weekly meetings, the daily meetings, the mentoring, and so on. They're building all of that, and it can be done. That Startup Chile experiment is showing the way to build communities like this. When you're ready, you should look into what we did there.
I think there's a very good sort of dynamic that you can create on a vessel, right, where there's something of a cost to leaving the vessel, right? It's not as cost free as going from your office here in Palo Alto to some other place, but it's not an enormous cost. So it's only half an hour away.
Max, I have to be hesitant in front of this audience as it's being taped. But imagine 1,000 males on a ship.
That's a bad idea. Right. That's not what we're looking for.
I know. That's what the problem is going to be. You're not going to get a balanced population over there. And it's not going to be conducive to social to building the social skills you need.
Although I would somewhat disagree. Actually, we've had a lot of good interest from groups like Women 2.0 and some other groups that have expressed that look, this will be actually a great place to find and meet guys, for example, but a lot of them are saying,
solving Silicon Valley's dating problems.
But a lot of them are looking for really interesting communities, and there are a lot of women out there who are working on cool startups. So I think if the gender ratio doesn't end up being all that great, I think that would look poorly on us, not necessarily on the situation. I think that's just our failure of not having found those women, because I do think they're out there, and I do think we can get them.
Right.
Good. Well, Max, you recently polled startups and entrepreneurs who have shown interest in Blueseed. What did that reveal? What were your findings?
So we have about 50 different countries are represented. And so far, we have over 200 companies who are interested, and hundreds of is this still on? Okay, yes. And hundreds of different entrepreneurs who are looking to be on board. And it revealed something very interesting. So originally, we thought this would be all about the visa problems, and this is my passion. This is what I want to address. And actually, what we saw from the data was that a lot of them were interested in the environment itself. So a lot of them said, how awesome would it be to be living on the innovation ship where all the new cool technologies, people from around the world, sort of a merit-based system instead of a luck-based system, sort of how we have in this country. And that was really what was driving a lot of them. They were very they saw this grand vision. That was sort of the aspirational goal. It's like being in a Stanford or such style dorm room, where a lot of the cool ideas, Facebook and Google and such, were born in the dorm situation. They didn't come out of the 39-year-old or 40-year-old. A lot of good companies do, but a number of them have also come out of these dorm situations that encourage a lot of collaboration, a lot of cool ideas to mix. And we saw that actually the majority of people looking to come on board were really thrilled about that. They said, yes, the visa situation is necessary. It solves a problem that allows me to come on board, but it's not what drives me to want to be on board. What drives me is the quality of the interactions that I'll get there and the cool collaborations that it will result. And I think that's part of the reason why it's not as easy to do this, or there wouldn't be as much value add from that regard doing this on an island or doing this in another country. You don't get the feeling, you're all on the same ship.
Why don't you lease a cruise liner for 3 or 4 months during winter when they're not being used and try the experiment?
We looked into that. Sure. Unfortunately, the possibility of doing that is the amount of infrastructure that you have to set up in order to be able to do it, in order to be able to launch it, means that it's not feasible to do on such a short time frame. Also, our kind of minimum viable product is defined by the size that you need of a vessel in order to be stable enough in those waters for most of the year. Because if you're on there losing your lunch every day, that's not exactly a situation conducive of succeeding in a startup, right?
Some questions from the audience, and one to just go from the audience to go back to the North Dumpling Island idea for a second. Would that be driving job growth, you know, in America? Do you see that?
See, none of these ideas are driving job growth in America. Even Blue Seat isn't going to drive job growth here because the entrepreneurs on the boat can't jump off it to hire people. It's hard to do that. Okay, right. If you're going to be on the internet talking to people, you might as well. You could be anywhere on this continent, or you could be in South America and do the same. So, America is screwed as far as job growth goes. Like I said, this is the sadness of our policies. So, it does create 1,000 exciting startups nearby. And you would hope that some of them would be able to come to the U.S. once they were ripe. But again, we're now dependent on these adjudicators working with the USCIS, making some sensible decisions, and they haven't shown a tendency to do that so far. So there's some challenges here.
So in the short term, it wouldn't drive job growth, but eventually the hope is that they would move to the U.S.
Max is optimistic.
I think they certainly would. I think if we even get one successful company, one Google or one Facebook, you know, the most successful, of course. But if we get even one moderately successful company, I think it will be a win. You know, I think it'll be a job well done, and it'll create a lot of cool technologies and a lot of jobs. USCIS can see us sort of as a test case. You know, if a company is coming from Blue Seed, at least they know that it's been vetted by us. It has a high profile. There's a relationship there. So it wouldn't be like somebody just coming in from nowhere and saying, here's who I am, here's what I want to do. It'll be a specific company coming through us, and I think that'll put them on a different level.
That relates to the next question from the audience. Say this does work, and it is a test case. Vivek, with your knowledge or your experience in Washington, could this potentially drive legislation to make it easier for foreign entrepreneurs to build companies in the U.S.?
You're assuming that there's intelligent life in Washington, D.C. Okay, I'm pessimistic that anything will spur those people. If they don't see the problem right now, I don't know what it's going to take. So I've become a pessimist over the last year or two. So
you're essentially conceding that legislation is just not going to happen. I mean,
not for the next year or two.
So if not legislation, is there any other so you have your finger to the pulse of this world. Is there any other solutions you've heard? We've heard North Dakota.
No, I think the rest of the world is going to benefit from America's stupidity. I hate to be so pessimistic, but like I said, I deal with this all the time. I get emails, several emails every week from entrepreneurs with really great companies who've been kicked out or who aren't allowed to get visas. They're here on this visa or that visa, and they're not allowed to start their companies or work for them. It's just stupidity. I deal with this, see this too much.
I think the best example for China has been Hong Kong. I think what China needed to start realizing that it was time to leave the communist system was a shining example of what could happen if you actually sort of allow for some freedom, for some new ideas, for people to try new things. So I think Blue Seed may have a chance. Blue Seed may have a chance of actually affecting legislation because it'll be a tangible example of the problem, as opposed to people just talking about and showing studies and showing papers and showing numbers and statistics. I think that's not nearly as powerful as what we will be doing. So I'm quite hopeful on that.
Then Max, I tell you, speak to Mayor Bloomberg and do it in Bahamas. Bahamas is only a short flight from New York City, and they have lots of nonstops there. He might well support something like that. If you take your ideas, all the work you've done, and put together a plan for setting up a high-tech city in Bahamas, it's win-win.
So it's very far from Silicon Valley, though.
New York is the other Silicon Valley. It's rising rapidly. Nate, you see it all the time. What do you think about New York?
I do.
People here don't look beyond Silicon Valley. That's the problem here, that all we see is this universe and the rest of the world doesn't exist. But there are other places where, you know, tech is happening.
Hugely in New York. It's seen as you know, just surpassing Boston and very much catching up to Silicon Valley. And, you know, out of all the tech hubs, I think they ranked the top seven tech hubs in the U.S. In recent years. New York is the only one where venture capital deals are actually up.
And Bahamas is really a short flight away from there. So it would be like your boat. It would take as long to get to the Bahamas from New York City as it is from here to get to the boat. You should look into it.
So there's a – I think I go back to what people have expressed interest in, what people are really interested in that have spoken to us. And that has always been that they want to be in the prime location when it comes to creating a company. If they're going to go through the trouble of actually coming to this country and creating the startup and coming talking to investors, the amount of investment that's going on in New York is still dwarfed by the amount of investment that's going on in Silicon Valley.
If there were 1,000 companies in the Bahamas, you'd find the VCs hopping on the next flight there. That's the way it goes.
VC it is nice weather. So I fully agree that I think the startup environment and the startup community will be expanding into these territories even more so than it already has been. But for us, it's a matter of starting in the most fertile, the best place, and then expanding into these other markets.
Well, because that's certainly the intention. If you can't get the financing together, that's plan B.
Sure.
This is from the audience as well. Kind of centers around the question of, you know, where do we draw the line? Say this does work, and say we are able to create a, you know, tech community on the ocean. What about, you know, where do we draw the line in terms of, say, you know, pioneers that want to create sort of quote unquote dark economy societies? You know, say we start with a casino or a, you know, credit rating agency on the ocean, or a, you know, pioneer who wants to fly the flag of a nation that, you know, allows laws that are, you know, clearly immoral. Where do we draw the line? Could this potentially open up? I'm sure you come across a concern from people you tell this idea to, because this potentially open up the floodgates to, you know, some societies cropping up in the ocean that are disagreeable.
So we've already seen gambling and sort of you know, the whole tourism industry through the cruise lines. And I have nothing against the cruise lines. I have nothing against tourism. But I think that it's actually important for us to extend this really interesting space, this method of solving problems by going out into the ocean and going into new jurisdictions, into something that's actually really positive and really productive, as opposed to just gambling, which I don't want to say anything too bad about people who like to gamble and such. It's, you know, it's their pastime and their choice, but it's not something as productive and as valuable as starting new companies and creating new technologies. So I think we're still going to see a lot of individuals who want to go out into the ocean and want to try things that we may not agree with. And it's up to us to say, look, this is not going to fly. What you're doing out there in the ocean, despite the fact that you're beyond the 12-mile limit, is something that we're going to put pressure on that we're not going to allow. So if a number of individuals are going out there and doing something that we consider immoral, I think it's important for us to go out there and pressure them to put a stop to that to the extent that we legally can. And when it comes to something like Blue Seed, I think that Blue Seed and companies that are doing activities like it should be not just allowed to exist, but helped and welcomed with open arms when they're doing something that's positive and productive for the country and indeed for the world.
Vivek, I want to turn back. You know, I'm a little concerned about your pessimism in Washington, and you know, the Jobs Act passed, and that was largely targeted at benefiting startups and making it easier for them to raise money. Did that give you any optimism?
Again, the investment bankers seem to rule D.C. What it does is it creates bounties for them to make money on. They loosen regulations and so on. There's lots of potential for abuse over there. So even the Jobs Act, there's a lot of optimism about crowdfunding, but there are a lot of, you know, dark sides of it, where again you might have the investment banking community making money from it, and we don't get the entrepreneurship we expect. So it's not all smooth sailing up ahead.
And the thinking is that immigration, even just the thought, it's just so toxic that any reform will get rolled up into the larger.
Yeah, I'm not optimistic. I mean, Jerry Moran's office contacted me yesterday to tell me about their new startup visa bill. Looked at it, looks great, but then again, I sent an email saying I'll believe it when I see it. Literally, it's going to get stuck in politics. And right now, it looks good for everyone to be putting bills forward, so it looks like they're doing something. But these senators really don't follow up afterwards. They don't use the political capital they need. They don't get the support from their leaders, and these bills don't get through. That's D.C. We get excited in Silicon Valley because we think that the rest of the world is as efficient as we are, but it doesn't work that way, especially in D.C.
Max, this is from the audience. What's the most unexpected thing you've learned while studying or tackling this problem?
So the most unexpected thing I've learned is actually about fundraising. So it turns out that I was speaking to our brokers that we're working with, looking for ships and things, about exactly how are they looking to do the fundraising for projects of this sort and such. And here in Silicon Valley, we're very used to you bootstrap it until a certain point, then you have a friends and family round, then you move on from there. And this is sort of anathema to the cruise line and to the maritime world. So for them, you kind of have to dream bigger and bigger every time. And then, you're not talking about a serious project. And then, so you're talking about some $50 million, $100 million or more dollars. So that was actually the biggest shock to me, that it seems to be, easier to raise more money than it is to raise less money. When it comes to this, which is just, to me, it's bizarre, having come from sort of the Silicon Valley ethos.
Max, they say that, and then when it comes time to putting money in, people don't put money in, and that's what the problem is. It's as hard to raise big amounts of money as it is a small amount of money. They're just looking for reasons to diss you.
Oh, no. But the thing is, they end up having much longer conversations with us when we talk about the bigger amounts of money. So far, we've had a lot more traction in that regard.
There's something. Get the $500,000 from Peter Thiel. At least you're not living on ramen. And get others, get more money from the Silicon Valley crowd so that they're committed to it. And then they can scale up because there are billions here. I mean, and for getting $40, $50 million together out of these billions is not that hard. The money is here. Just have to get them to commit to it.
So, Max, you said that you hope to launch this ship by the end of 2013. That's accurate.
Yep.
And so how much money do you project to will you have need to have raised at that stage to cover the overhead costs of the ship?
So we're looking to raise, depending on how well fundraising goes and depending on the specific vessel that we end up going with. So if we are able to raise more, then we'll go with a different vessel than if we're able to raise less. But it'll be anywhere in the neighborhood of about $30 million on the very on the lower end, and $80 million or $90 million on the high end, so it's within that range.
And this is from the audience. Does that factor in kind of the operating costs of, say, insurance, a police force, a court system?
That includes everything.
And do you even plan on having those things?
So,
1,000 nerds, you've got a lot to worry about.
Yeah, if you steal somebody's laptop, where are you going to go? Those are more detailed questions in each of those, of course. But yes, it includes each of those, and we're addressing each of those problems, because in order to sort of create a community outside of the jurisdiction of existing nation, then you need to have a way that you're addressing each of those problems.
You should also go to Hollywood and see if you can get a reality show out of it.
We've been approached several times, actually.
And would you allow cameras on for a reality show?
We would certainly allow some cameras, and especially when it comes to startups that have volunteered or are interested in that. But it's dangerous to turn the environment into literally a reality TV show. I think that would hurt the quality of the startups. It would hurt the quality of their work. So it's something that has to be handled very carefully.
This is another one from the audience. Concerns over weather. Can you give us some kind of information on the weather where you hope to moor the ship?
So the position, which is about 12 miles west-southwest of Half Moon Bay, it's a small town on the coast here, is similar to the conditions that you'd experience in San Francisco itself. So it's chilly most of the year, and it gets waters that are labeled as sort of moderately rough, so they're not easygoing like you might get in the Caribbean, and they're not the worst of the waters you might get in the North Sea or something like that, But it does have the advantage, for example, that you never get hurricanes out this way. You never have those sorts of serious problems. So as long as you have, in this case, the larger your vessel, the more stable you are. So as long as you're dealing with a vessel that's over a certain length and is about 1,000 passengers or more, then you're doing pretty well being stationary in those waters.
Vivek, if you were a gambling man, what are the odds that at the end of 2013 this becomes reality?
I don't want to be negative, my friend. I mean, but I'm not optimistic because there are too many.
You're not optimistic about anything these days, aren't you?
What's that?
You're not optimistic about anything these days, are
you? Normally I'm very optimistic. I mean, it's just that when you talk about immigration and you talk about getting major funding, you always have problems. So the problem is in getting people to put their money where their mouth is and then dealing with all the government regulations. When you have to deal with government regulations, it's hurdle after hurdle after hurdle because they don't even know all the jerks that they're going to have to deal with yet, all these bureaucrats that they're going to have to deal with, all the senators that are going to start raising objections and this and that. And then the anti-immigrants, the moment it's successful, the anti-immigrants step in saying, oh, these foreigners are taking our jobs away. So there's so many hurdles here.
That's actually an interesting point. The whole foreigners are taking our jobs away. We've heard it a number of times, and the problem with that statement is it sort of means that they didn't quite understand the business model. So these are individuals who would have loved to have been here creating jobs in the U.S., starting their companies in the U.S., but we don't allow them to do so.
Difficult to disentangle that. The bulletin board of these wackos are going to start going rampant saying this is a plot by Infosys. NASSCOM is going to set up an H-1B outsourcing center on this ship, and they're going to take our jobs away. That's the sort of negativity you're going to start see coming out of these wackos. I deal with them all the time. They hound me wherever they can. No matter what you do, these foreigners are going to take our jobs away. They're unemployed because they're out of touch. They have the wrong skills, and they were overpaid when they were 30 years younger, and now they're blaming the foreigners for taking their jobs away. That's the way it goes in this immigration debate. I deal with them all the time.
Well, I think that's why we need a few successes early on, hopefully, to demonstrate that that a lot of successful companies and a lot of good jobs will be created.
Look at Silicon Valley. 52% of the successes here are Silicon Valley are immigrants. Yet you can't get through to this crowd.
Well, I think in Silicon Valley, we've gotten through to the crowd in Silicon Valley.
Yes,
but it's them getting through to the crowd in Washington.
It's the rest of America, exactly. And then they start, lobbying and sending nasty emails, and suddenly the senators and congressmen people start panicking and trying to be macho by blocking legislation. They start pandering to an uninformed electorate. That's the name of the game in immigration.
Vivek, but what happens when that percentage of the companies that have been founded starts to drop, but the companies that have been founded by immigrants, when that percentage starts to drop, what are the implications of that?
Nate, I just started a project at Stanford to update my research because I had looked at the startups from 1995 to 2005, and Annalise Sachsen had looked a decade, 15 years earlier, and we saw a dramatic trend up. I'm not sure what the result – so we're now updating it. What happened in the last 6 years? I'm not sure what the results are going to show. I suspect they'll show a downturn because hundreds of thousands of skilled immigrants here who are stuck on H-1B visas have not been able to start companies or they've been going home. I'll know in about 3 months or so. So let's discuss it again.
Great. What happens though if that number drops? What are the economic implications?
You're seeing less startup activity in Silicon Valley anyway. The economy is still depressed. This could, our economy could be booming. Growth is pretty low. We're not creating the jobs. Look at the depressing state of the U.S. economy right now. If we had brought in another 1 million, 2 million immigrants from all over the world, skilled and unskilled, the economy would be healing a lot faster. But yet the paranoia is that these foreigners are going to take our jobs away. Like I said, this uninformed segment the electorate doesn't understand that when you bring more people in, you have more economic activity, the pie grows bigger, we create more jobs for people like them. They don't understand that. And how are you going to educate these people when you have Obama right now going around the war path saying Romney outsourced in his companies? And so, I mean, just the negativity that the president himself is spreading because of the elections nearing. So when you're dealing with all this game playing, how are you going to get beyond this? and all this, what we saw in the Republican primaries about the illegals and amnesty, and it's become so toxic right now that even Romney, who used to be a moderate on immigration, has become as anti-immigrant as everyone else was. Newt Gingrich was a reasonable guy here when it came to immigration, if you believe it or not. And he took so much fire for his reasonable views on immigration. So the whole debate is poisoned. It's toxic right now. It got worse with the Republican primaries.
Max, any thoughts?
We need a tangible example of success of foreign entrepreneurs coming here, creating companies through Blue Seed, and then ending up in U.S. soil. And I think Vivek's right. I think until we have that, it's very difficult to get there without some sort of stepping stone, some sort of tangible success that we can now point to and say, look, this person literally came from Belgium or wherever, created a company on Blue Seed, scaled up a little bit, then was able to get the proper visas, came on shore and created 10,000 jobs. When the media can point very specifically to a company and they can follow it from inception to Blue Seed to shore, I think that'll be very powerful and it'll make it a lot more difficult for politicians to fight against it. Not impossible necessarily. I still think you'll find detractors from the idea, but that tangible showcase of reality, I think, is what they need.
I applaud your optimism.
Well, hopefully that applause will possibly lead to some intros somewhere down the line, or you know, any help.
I'm glad to help in any way I can. I mean, I want to see you succeed. You know, like I said, I see a lot of hurdles, but this is why I'm suggesting something more reasonable, like Bahamas, where you could put your energy. And it could be done because you'll find governments helping you. Even New York will help you with that.
So. Well, like the startups we're hoping to have on board, right. I like to think big.
Right.
Well, I'd like to thank you both for being here today. Our time just wrapped up. But thank you so much. And we will check in the end of 2013 to see where we are.
Thank you very much.